Simon Hunt, how are you?
Good, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing
really good. You brought a mug of coffee. I've got one too.
Yeah, this is going to be the one of many. This is going to be the one of many. So, Simon, I think I'm really interested, and I'm also have a lot of questions as well as agreeable. How's that to set this up? With your macro point of view, but I want to get that first, and then we'll start unpacking that. So where are we at here in regards to, where are we at with your macro 30,000 foot view?
That is really the basic question to be answered, no matter whether you're in industry or you're an investor. I think we are at an important historical pivotal point in our history. What we see evolving is the old global structure that we have known for the last 80 odd years is now being threatened by a new group of countries under the aegis of BRICS Plus, who don't want to see the continuation of a unilateral world dominated by America and the dollar, but want to develop a unilateral world where the objective is resolving problems by negotiation and not by force. So if we go back in history, America, ever since 1991, and some say since World War II, have had a sole objective of dismembering Russia in order to gain control of the country's huge natural resources. What is now, so you can say that the war over Ukraine is actually a war between NATO, led by America, against Russia. And as we look at how the dots are coming together, it's increasingly likely that one way or another, there will be a direct war between NATO, led by Russia, NATO led by America, against China, supported by China, against Russia, supported by China and the other BRICS countries. You can see it by the way that increasingly Ukraine, using NATO's missiles, i.e. predominantly UK and America's, are being targeted against infrastructure and residential buildings in Russia. Where is this going to lead us to? There will come a point, I think, that Russia will lose patience. They can see how NATO is increasing the tempo against Russia by placing NATO troops in countries surrounding Russia, where there is the largest ever NATO exercise being conducted on Russian borders, where Poland has been receiving ever since February this year train loads of missiles and other military equipment. And even Poland has received a UK Air Force squadron. So you have to ask the question, is this to create a crisis from which diplomacy can take us away from war towards peace? The problem with that is that any peace negotiation would have to be equitable between NATO and Russia. And that is not the case at the moment. And again, one comes back to what has been America's historic objective, breaking up Russia. So I think the odds are increasing that there'll be some form of war, either or both military, or cyber attacks, or something else that could happen at any moment. I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow. I'm just saying at any moment, the situation has reached that crisis point. And then if we look at how America is increasing the containment temper on China, even to the extent that on the Kinmen Island, just off the coast of mainland China, it's an island owned by Taiwan, but where America has troops on that island training Taiwanese troops. And then you have the increasing military cooperation between Japan, America, Australia, Philippines, and so on. Despite all the nice talk coming from people like Blinken, the reality is quite different. And it's very interesting that so soon after Putin was inaugurated for his fifth term of presidency, only a few days later, he'll be in Beijing tomorrow and on Friday. I'm sure there are some very deep conversations that will take place, not just on trade. Because if you look around the world, I think events in the Middle East are likely to escalate. What I think shook the defense officials of Israel, America, and the UK was when Iran retaliated against the bombing of its consulate in Damascus for designated ballistic missiles were so designed to evade all of Israel's and America's and the UK's defense systems to hit the four military targets, designated ones, deliberately to hit but not to destroy. That must have been a wake-up call. when you listen to not just the American officials, but Israeli senior retired intelligence and IDF officials, the bottom line is always Iran is the head of the snake. So I'm concerned that at some point in the future, maybe 2 months, 4 months, 1 year, I don't know, there will be an attack on Iran. Iran doesn't want it. Russia doesn't want it. China doesn't want it. The Gulf countries don't want it. But the survival of Israel is just as important for Israel itself as it is for America. So I would not rule out the risk that at some point in the future, there will be an attack on Iran. What worries me also is that with that unpleasant geopolitical background, the global economy is not as robust and as strong as the markets are making them out to be. When we dig below the published data on the US economy, either America has actually in recession or is on the verge of being in recession. GDP numbers were probably overstated. Came in last year at 2.5%. But GDI, which should be more or less the same figure as GDP, only came in at 0.5%. Then you look at the fragility of the financial system, the debt issues, the fact that after seeing interest rates rising by almost 5 percentage points, that all we've seen, the only failures we've seen so far, have been the low-hanging fruit. And we've reached the point when the bigger fruit will start falling off the tree. Europe is also in a very fragile situation. Manufacturing remains in recession. Services have recovered somewhat. But I suspect services, as in America, have been bolstered by the strong performance of equity markets. China's economy is not really recovering yet. I think it will in the second half of the year. Certainly, talking to business people and those operating in the industrial trenches, business is still weakening. Though I think in the July plenum meeting, we will find there will be very strong measures taken to ensure that the debt issues, particularly with local governments, get support. So on our work, we will soon, whether this month or next month, start seeing a very big correction in global equity markets. For instance, we see the S&P 500 falling to around 3,000, about a 40% fall. And most other equity markets will be more or less the same. So what's that impact going to have on base metals, for instance? Gold is in a new phase that we've not seen for maybe since the early 1970s, because it's pretty clear to us that gold is slowly coming back into the monetary system within the BRICS group of nations. The BRICS group of nations at the moment, 10 members, accounting for about 30% of global GDP. But within 3 years, probably within 2 years, that membership will be up to 40. BRICS then will be accounting for over 50% of global population and GDP. What they are planning to do, and I think the plans will accelerate this year, as I'm told that the leadership sees 2024 as the optimum year to introduce their own investment and payment system, which will be primarily based on using their own currencies through blockchain, digital technology, but using gold instead of dollars as the differential account, which is what happens at the moment between China and Russia. Russia has a very significant trade surplus, which is guaranteed by an equivalent gold value in China's central bank, the PBOC. And I think similar arrangements are very quietly being made with certain Gulf countries. The problem is that America knows this. I know it, they know it. It's not something that they will use all the tools in their box to stop this development, because it would be the start of the dollar going down a slippery slope and the loss of America's global domination. So that's really the background between as to why the risk of war is a very real one, and quite likely this year.
Wow. So, what do I do with all
Well, I'm sorry you got me going.
No, that was scary and excellent at the same time. So let's start with two places with conflict. It doesn't seem like you believe that conflict is de-escalating, specifically in Europe, in Russia, and even in the Middle East. It seems that that is escalating.
Yeah.
And then my question is, why? And it certainly looks like the U.S. is the the antagonist here, or is the one provoking, or NATO, if you would. But why? Because war, despite the good it is, I should say good is the wrong word, but despite it supporting defense stocks, war is really not good for the economy. So why is the West provoking Russia?
Survival. The answer is a simple one. The survival of the system that they've been able to dominate since World War II.
Okay.
Not prepared to negotiate a compromise between the BRICS group of nations and their own system, or the G7.
So that leads me to the next question is, it doesn't seem, correct me if I'm wrong, I would think that the bond market, the U.S. bond market, the treasuries would be the asset that they're trying to protect. But how are they going to protect the bond market and the dollar?
Well, that's a big that's the key question. And I think, excuse me, I think it's a matter of, because they've been talking to us. It's a matter of internal debate within Washington. Do we support the treasury market or do we support the dollar? And I'm not sure whether the argument has been decided yet. But let's assume that what I think is going to happen, and that there will be a war sometime this year. One of the big results financially will be Japan, with its $4.3 trillion of investments outside Japan, will want money back home. Not just the government money, but the households and institutions, be a natural reaction. That will lead to a cascade of developments.
Okay, so that is a really interesting point, and we did not touch on is Japan's role in this equation, this calculus. I had a guest on 2 weeks ago who talked about the end of the yen carry trade. Is that what you're alluding to?
Yes.
What? That has severe implications here.
Yes.
That would end.
Yes.
That would, now let's play that out. Is Japan the butterfly in the woods that creates the windstorm that knocks down all the trees? And
that's,
is that
putting it,
is that would take the U.S. equity markets?
I think it's one of them. And it's okay. A very important part of the consequences of war starting. Europe has already been fleeing out of its own markets into America.
That's propped up the stock market, right?
Yeah. And I think that on the onset of any war, that becomes a flood into America as the supposed safe haven.
Right.
But against that, you will have Mrs. Watanabe saying, I want my money here, back in Japan.
Okay, so that happens. That is not good for U.S. equities.
Nope. But let's go down that route a little bit further. Excuse me. What we see is America, followed by Europe and many other countries, being in recession in the second half of this year. What that implies also is that early in 2025, with either the same US administration or a new one, there'll be massive pump priming. Massive.
Yes.
Which then leads to the dollar falling sharply. It leads to inflation taking off, made even worse by shortages of food and energy. So prices rising very strongly. So that between mid-2025 and mid-2027, we are going to see a repeat of the 1970s and early 1980s huge inflation takeoff.
Yeah, so, okay.
And so, hold on.
Yeah.
So, we then have, in round numbers, U.S. inflation, 13% plus, global inflation, 15% plus. And what does that do to the bond market?
It tanks.
Long-term yields will be over 10%. What, and similarly across the world, what does that do to a highly indebted global financial system? It crashes. So we then have, at best, rolling recessions for 5 to 7 years and the probability of depression. What does that do to base metal prices? What does it do to gold? I'm not clever enough to know how high gold will go. But if you take a very simple analysis, gold always retains its value against currencies. We have by 2030, we have the dollar index falling in half from current levels. So you can say on the very simple analysis, gold prices will rise by at least 50%. But because gold will be coming back in the monetary system within the BRICS group nations, it's probably going to be much higher than that. How will that happen? Well, China has been encouraging ever since the Shanghai Gold Exchange opened in 2002 for its citizens to own gold. About, lost track of time, 9 months ago, the PBOC made it possible for households to use their bank accounts to buy gold directly from the Shanghai Gold Exchange, physical gold. Not only that, they created a system whereby households could buy gold, physical gold, on an installment basis. So, since the Shanghai Gold Exchange opened in 2002, Chinese citizens have bought approximately 23,000 tons of gold. So the day will come, probably within 2 years, when China will say, our currency is supported by the gold which our citizens own. 23,000 tons plus, without mentioning how much gold the government owns through its different ministries. Another 20,000 tons. Not just what's quoted that the PBOC owns, but most of the rest is owned by the PLA. What the PLA imports does not get covered in the customs data, either in or out. Then if you look at Russia, Russia's real gold holdings are north of 12,000 tons, not the whatever it is, 1,500 odd tons that the central bank owns. That ownership is held by the company that sits above the central bank. So you can see that if BRICS is allowed to develop, that gold comes back into the financial system. To the financial system, which is a development that America certainly won't want to see evolve. But what this leads to another development which America wants to stop. The enlargement of BRICS will include several important commodity-producing countries, not just energy, but base metals. These countries are starting to realize that all they have been receiving all their metal production has been a dollar that has fallen in value every year. So that a $1980 dollar is today worth 25 cents. So when they do the sums, they say, well, our profits have been illusionary. So if the enlargement of BRICS is allowed to evolve, then it's quite possible that these commodity-producing countries will say, I don't want dollars in return for my production. So it's the world we have known for the last 80-odd years is coming to an end. The real question, does it come to an end through negotiation between the major parties, or does it end in war? The history of empires ending has always been war, except for the British Empire. We negotiated our way out. But given what I've said earlier, I don't see that as a likely prospect.
So you just said if BRICS is allowed to develop, And that's really where we're at right now. That's the thesis for all of the conflict, if you would.
Yeah.
And it's really control over the coming new monetary system, correct?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Let me slightly change tack.
Please.
Everybody that I read, investment banks, brokers, etc., the basic assumption in all of their forecasting for base metals is that tomorrow is better than today. There is no recession for the next 10 years. So there's only one direction that prices can go. The reality is going to be quite different. The reality is that despite all the hype, the green economy, which is mostly politically inspired, not following the science, the real science, we're going to see a completely different evolution of copper prices, to take one example. Probably we're in the sort of topping out phase now of around $10,000. On our work, we see by early next year, prices down to $6,500.
It's a big haircut.
It's a big haircut for certain people who want to buy copper assets. Then with the inflationary environment, we'll see a spike of around $14,000 2 years later, mid-2027. Which will coincide with bond yields rising over 10% and the whole system collapsing. So that would probably take us something like down to $2,000. And it's only when we come out of this period of conflict, wars, and depression that we see long-term growth evolving. So, those who want copper assets have got to manage massive volatility.
Got it. Where does energy play in all this? Because that's what wars are also fought over, is energy assets, because that's what really fuels the economy.
Well, energy is the basis of everything.
Right.
Well, I think the CEO of Exxon summed it up extremely well in a speech he gave in November last year, when he said, "We invest in fossil fuels. We do not invest in renewables. But we do invest in the technologies that reduce emissions." Sums it all up perfectly. But energy prices, if we have an escalation in the Middle Eastern situation, and there is an attack on Iran, should that happen, emphasize, should it happen, Iran is prepared for it, not just with their huge arsenal of missiles, including hypersonic, but they have mined the Straits of Hormuz seabed. So just a click of a switch, you shut down the Straits of Hormuz.
new takers coming through there.
Yeah, no oil's
coming through there.
No.
You're looking at $200 a barrel.
Plus. Who knows?
Who knows?
But in the meantime, forget that. In the meantime, you've got Saudi and Russia and others working very closely together, wanting higher prices. If that reduces consumption, their revenues remain the same. And the oil assets stay with them for longer. They don't get depleted as quickly. So really the trend, whichever way you look at it, and I'm not an oil expert, is that oil prices in real terms will be rising. What does that do to inflation globally, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
It's interesting too, because you said it well, it's the 70s, and I would add, just it seems like the 70s on steroids. It's you have high monetary inflation and you have high bond yields.
We had high bond yields then.
Yeah. Right? 15% or 17%, it topped out, I want to say, in the early 80s. Yeah, and you have deflationary pressure, economic pressure. It's the worst of all worlds.
Well, you have the inflation first, then followed by depression, stroke deflation, stroke rolling recessions.
Yeah. So, on the other side of all this, I guess, what do you see that looking like, or what's your best guess on what that looks like as far as global influence? Is America just lost all influence, or yeah? Talk to me about that.
Well, even assuming no war, which I think is a fragile assumption, BRICS is going to have an increasing influence on global affairs. As I said, within 3 years and probably within 2 years, their membership is 40, not 10, accounting for over 50% of global GDP and population. So it comes back to my original thesis, war is very likely. Now, a lot will depend on who wins the American election.
Yeah, which brings
you
me to
ask, you also then have to ask the question, will there be an election?
Right. So, okay, let's game that out. Let's say equities markets tank starting now or in June or July. We have an election coming up. Yeah, wouldn't the powers that be want to really goose it? So goose the prime, if you would, or prime the pump, as you said, to support equities?
Yeah, it puts the Fed in a dilemma.
Doesn't it?
I think so.
I think so, too.
I think that if inflation is running way ahead of what they want, there won't be a cut in interest rates. That comes with a new administration maybe a new chairman of the Fed. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the election. So when you say we have to assume there will be an election, are you talking literally or are you talking figuratively? Meaning they're going to get their guy in regardless of...
Exactly. Do we have a war beforehand?
Right.
If you have a war, you don't need to have an election.
Yeah, that's just something I haven't considered, which is a very great point. Well,
I think I think Bobby Kennedy can actually be a dark horse.
I hope so.
You're not the only one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess, what would you leave us with?
The next, where are we now? 24, 6-7 years is not a period for investment, it's a period for trading. Huge volatility. But what one needs for one's own security are two assets, gold and food. Food is going to be in very short supply, and food prices are going to soar. So food is survivability, gold is security.
Got it. So stack gold and silver coins and start a garden.
Yeah. Physical, not ETFs.
Well, Simon, I'm going to end on that. I want to tell you how much enjoyed is the wrong word.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy it, but stimulating is the right word, I think.
Can I add that if anybody wants to
please
get hold of me, my website is simon-hunt.com.
Excellent. I will put that in the show notes. Any other way to get in touch with you, or is that the best way?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Is that the best way, or is there any other way to get in touch with you?
Or else, my email address is simon@shss.com.
Can I put that in the show notes as well?
Yeah, sure.
And I might add to everybody listening and watching that Simon's very responsive, and I just really appreciate that. So.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Simon. I'd love to have you on again. Yeah, I'd love to have you on again.
Have a nice day.
Yeah, I will. I'd love to have you on again. I don't know.
Anytime. Excuse me, anytime.
All right. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Cheers. Bye.